expire in January and hopefully will go away and we can move on to more productive endeavors in the Klamath. There's also the Upper Basin Comprehensive Agreement, which is agreement that actually is the only agreement that actually has demand reduction in it. It reduces demand for water in the basin above the lake by 30,000 acre feet. So that improves the flows in the streams above the lake for fish that are struggling there. And it's an agreement between the local irrigators up there and the tribes. Now, the problem with that agreement is it's connected to the larger agreement, the Klamath-Basin Restoration Agreement, which actually, once the water comes downstream and into the lake, the Klamath-Basin Restoration Agreement would take even more water out of the lake and give it to the Klamath irrigators and leave the salmon in the Klamath River to die. So it's our hope that some modification of the Upper Basin Comprehensive Agreement between the Klamath tribes and their neighbors can live on. And it's also our hope that some modification of the Klamath Hydropower Settlement Agreement, which is the agreement between PacifiCorp and other settlement parties, which involves guarantees of funding for dam removal. And those guarantees are $200 million from a trust fund created in Oregon and California from surcharges on PacifiCorp customers in both those states. That trust fund's around $100 million now, but it's supposed to go to $200 million. There's also $200 million available in the California Water Bond, which was recently passed. So there's $400 million for the dam removal, and that's, you know, more than double what some estimates have come in for the dam removal. And so the funding for the dam removal was never needed to come from Congress. It had already been set up by the states. So we're hoping that agreement can go forward and PacifiCorp will agree to do that. And PacifiCorp can do that simply by going to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and saying, we've got an agreement to remove the dams. We're going to apply for permission to remove. And they could do that tomorrow if they would just agree to take the $400 million made available by the two states and go forward removal. There were some other things that they had wanted from Congress through passes through federal legislation. They wanted to be the ones who didn't want to be the ones to remove the dams themselves. They didn't want to be what's called the dam removal entity. They also wanted a waiver on any liability from the federal level. But I think it's pretty clear at this point that the cheapest thing for PacifiCorp's customers is for them to take a modified deal, take the $400 million, remove those dams, and help restore the Klamath Basin. Now, the most expensive thing for them to do right now would be to go back into the relicensing process, go through this water quality certification process through the two states. They're probably going to try to fight the water quality certification if they can get them. I mean, if they're not just flat-out denied because they have such incredible water quality problems at those dams, they're going to try to fight them. And then there's going to be all this expenditure that their ratepayers will have to pick up. And in the end, they're going to have to remove those dams because these dams are old, they're outdated, they generate a very small amount of power. PacifiCorp and some of his allies like to go around and say that they're going to relicense the dams. But the cost of relicensing is extraordinary. That's like me saying, you know, if I took my a beat-up old Toyota and I unfortunately totaled in an accident, I'm going to spend $20,000 straightening out the frame and getting it back in perfect condition, or I'm going to spend $10,000 buying, you know, another car and, you know, $200 towing the wreck of my old Toyota to the dump. It just the numbers don't add up for PacifiCorp to relicense these dams. I've seen figures where people saying to relicense them, you know, would cost $1 billion. And that's, you know, this is something that, you know, the Kuruk tribe is going around saying that relicensing will cost $1 billion, and so it's going to cost all these people in six states $1 billion. Well, that's not true, because the public utility commissions of the states that regulate PacifiCorp, because it's a publicly regulated utility, they're not going to allow PacifiCorp to spend $1 billion retrofitting dams that barely provide enough power to light a large town. You probably haven't heard of many large towns that have billion-dollar power plants because to light them, because it's just not nobody does that.
So
but
it's,
they would do the what we're talking about is the cost benefit calculation and finding the path to the cheapest source of power for the customer. So what they'll do is they'll run the numbers. The numbers will show that it's much less expensive to remove and replace that power. So, for example, they could take a power plant that they currently have or their power plant that they're going to build soon, and they could just make it slightly bigger. Because, again, these dams generate so little power, it's not worth spending $1 billion on.
Mm-hmm.
And Pacifica also likes to pretend in the press, as I've seen, that somehow it's optional for them to put fish passage on. At this point, the fish passage prescriptions have come down from the agencies, and Pacific Corps fought them in court and lost. And so those are required. There's no getting around them, and that is going to be an extraordinarily expensive undertaking. We see it as a positive that the Pacific Corps will now feel more pressure to actually do something and make a deal to take those dams out than just sit around and be able to blame Congress for not doing anything, for them not doing anything. Because right now, they've been running their dams on annual licenses and harming water quality and severely impairing the fisheries abundance of the Klamath Basin. And those annual licenses don't do anything about those things. Those dams don't pass salmon. And they can't pass salmon. I mean, you know, one of the things about these dams is they're just so they're such poor candidates for fish passage. And if you put fish passes on them, they're gonna make a lot less power and money for the utility than they are now. Because, for example, the biggest money maker, J.C. Boyle, the way that it makes money is it takes the river out of the bed and it puts it through a penstock. And it runs it down to generators. Well, you're not going to be able to do that when you have salmon in the river, because the salmon aren't going to be able to swim through the penstock without getting killed. So if you can't run the water through the penstock, you're going to be able to make money off of it. And the dam is set up in such a way on the river that it's in a very awkward place for building a fish ladder that has adequate attraction flows for fish. Fish have to feel like they're actually swimming up a river rather than just, you know, you can't put a sign in the river saying, you know, here's the main flow of the river, but actually there's a ladder over there facing a different direction and with a flow slightly off the main stream. You can't do that. You've got to build it in such a way so the fish can find their way without signage to those ladders. So it's going to be extraordinarily expensive to put a passage there. I mean, when they built Copco 1, the first dam they put in, you know, you can look at the newspaper clippings in the Klamath County Museum. The predecessor of Pacific Corps was going around saying they were going to, of course they were going to build fish passages because the Klamath Basin was famous for its abundant fish runs, absolutely famous. And, you know, they built the dam, and then they put a notice in the paper saying, sorry, we couldn't figure out a way to put ladders over that dam. So we're just going to set up some hatcheries. And they effectively denied the Klamath tribes their treaty right to fisheries, but back in those days, those rights weren't as well respected as they are now by authorities. They were able to get away with it, unfortunately.
I've been speaking with Jim McCarthy, Communication Director at Water Watch of Oregon. Thanks so much, Jim, for joining us.
Thank you.
For KBOO News, I'm Jared Dantzler. I'm speaking with Tom Schlosser, an attorney for the Hoopa Valley Tribe down in Northern California. Tom, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you.
Tom, I'm wondering if you can give us your perspective and the perspective and priorities of the Hoopa Valley and the tribes down in California when it comes to treaty and water rights in regards to these agreements.
Well, thanks for the chance. The agreements deal with different things, and the Upper Basin Agreement is not something that adversely affects the California tribes. California tribes, particularly Hoopa and Yurok, have federally protected water and fishing rights, and when those reservations were set aside in 1864 and before then, the United States assured the tribes that they would be able to make a moderate living based on taking fish. So the problem the Hoopa tribe has always had with the KBRA is that it's clear that it will not provide sufficient water to restore fish. The Bureau of Reclamation had a big study done on that a few years ago, and it shows the water flows that are necessary, and instead the KBRA allows most of that water to be diverted out of the river. So it's no accident, and it's no surprise that Congress has refused to approve those agreements. They didn't act on them in 2011, they didn't act on them last year, they didn't act on them this year, and they're never going to approve these agreements. They were poorly designed.
What is your work as an attorney, and what are your hopes for a better agreement for the tribes, for them to be able to sustain on fish and to restore Salmon Nation to the lower basin? And additionally, how does that affect us in the upper basin, in the northern?
Well, let me first talk about the litigation that is pending. The Hoopa tribe has appealed to the Federal Court of Appeals from FERC, that's the licensing agency, FERC's reluctance to proceed with licensing. And we'll see whether we're successful in that. What we want is for FERC to issue a license and put Pacific Core to the choice. Do they really want to retrofit these dams, which we think cannot be done cost effectively? We think the Public Utilities Commissions would never approve it. Or are they just going to take them out? And so we will get some guidance on that. I don't think there's other litigation pending. Of course, there's the big water adjudication, the Klamath Basin adjudication, and there is active litigation in that. And with the termination of the KBRA, it's not clear what effect it'll have on the basin adjudication, but that whole process is pending in the circuit court, and there are appeals to be had in the Oregon appellate courts. You know, the waterways of the United States belong to all of the people, and a private company doesn't have the right to obstruct them without a federal approval. So the Federal Power Act governs what Pacific Corps can and can't do. Now, they've succeeded in blocking the licensing process, or relicensing process, but that's bound to be temporary because their license to do what they're doing to the river expired in 2006, and sooner or later they're going to be held to account. I'm not sure there's anything the public can do to influence Pacific Corps. I mean, they're a Mid-America and Warren Buffett company, and they're out to make money.
Tom, I want to thank you for speaking with us here at KBOO. I've been speaking with Tom Schlosser, an attorney for the Hoopa Valley Tribes in California. Tom, thank you again.
Well, thanks for calling. Good talking to you.
KBOO Community Radio currently has a one-to-one match for all new and increasing members. A $100 new or increased donation will become $200 to support the important work of KBOO.
If you become a member at this time or increase your donation over last year, your donation will be matched one-to-one by a group of generous donors up to $10,000. Consider becoming a monthly sustaining member. This can be set up easily and securely online. Over 70% of KBOO's income is from you, our listeners, who take action to become KBOO members.
Go to kboo.fm/support to have your donation matched today, or mail your donation to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of WAMBA, Friday, January 1st, 2016, at 9 p.m. at the Analog Cafe in Portland. WAMBA is an African-inspired fusion band featuring improvisation with heavy African percussion breaks. The eight-piece band mixes traditional rhythms from Ghana and West Africa with Afrobeat, highlife, funk, and jazz styles. Again, that's Wamba performing live Friday, January 1st at the Analog Cafe, 720 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is KBOO Portland.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.net.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1946.